sometimes you gotta think like a lady.
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 And act like a boss.
Welcome to Think Like a Lady. You can follow us on Twitter at @ThinkLikeALady_ or on Facebook at @ThinkLikeALadyPodcast, as well as on Instagram at @ThinkLikeALady_podcast. We're available to listen to on all the major podcasting platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or just ask Amazon Alexa.
Welcome back to Think Like a Lady. Last episode, we discussed taking off hijab, putting on hijab, and the internal and social struggles that come with the burden of wearing it, and offering both sides of the perspective. It's just as challenging to take it off as it is to put it on. Just to recap, Think Like a Lady is a podcast meant to bridge the gap between intersectional feminism and Muslim women. And this episode, we're going to be talking about the expectations put on a woman when it comes to sex, particularly in marriage. So I remember when I was in college, I had a couple of friends over at my apartment. Everyone would come over and we would just play game nights and have fun. And I had a couple of friends over and one of my guy friends was there. We were watching The Hangover that night. And there was like an inappropriate breastfeeding scene that came on. He covered my eyes and he covered the eyes of the girl that was on his other side, the guy that was sitting in the middle. But he proceeded to watch. And we were like, what the hell? That same night, we had a discussion that was kind of pivoting off of what the hell was that? Why did you do that? One thing led to another. And we started talking about the expectations men have on women when it comes to sex. And he was just, you know, he kept on pulling out that verse in the Quran that a woman is cursed by the angels if she denies her husband any intimacy. And I'm just like, well, what if he treats her horribly? What if he's been like giving her crap all day long? That's an experience is engaging of two people, not one person. How can you expect someone to be all lovey-dovey and intimate when you've been giving them shit all day? And then, you know, the conversation proceeded and then we started talking about the first night of marriage. And I said, you know, amongst my friends that did get married, a lot of them told me that they were very uncomfortable because their whole lives, they're taught to adopt these ideals of covering up, whether it's a cultural reason or a religious reason, what have you. It doesn't matter. Everyone has their own reason. For a woman to just throw that out the window overnight just because a guy wants to get intimate, a whole lifetime has passed for a woman to be set in that behavior. You can't just expect her to just throw it out the window just like that, just for you. He was offended by this. He said, no, if my woman on the first night didn't want to intimate, I would be very upset. He then invoked that one verse where women are cursed by the angels. I was like, why does the woman's feelings not matter to you? Like, why is that not part of the conversation? And he was just like, well, you have to see it from the man's perspective. This is something he's been waiting for all his life. I was like, it doesn't sound like you love her. It just sounds like lust. Because if you loved her, you would care about her feelings. I know amongst my friend circle that this is a common experience. I can't speak to how many women feel this way, but I can only imagine that plenty do. What do you think?
When you get married, there's like something that's put into your heart from Allah, because getting married is a blessing from Allah, right? And there's this type of love for your spouse that's put into you. I guess I can't really describe unless you go through it. But with that being said, it's one thing for him to just say it. I would really have a problem with that. But then it's a completely different thing when he actually goes through it and that happens to him. He would probably be a lot more understanding. But I understand your concept of it's messed up for him to be thinking that way in the first place. You know what I mean? Like, he shouldn't even be having that thought process go through his head, because he should have more respect towards women than that. In expressing it that way, he's coming across as, I've married this woman, now she's my property, I can do whatever I want with her. And that kind of thinking is the cause of the majority of divorces that take place, along with a few other things. I mean, I would say two of the top things that people divorce over is fighting about money and fighting over children. But that concept of, you know, she's mine, I can do what I want with her, is what makes, you know, sexism so prevalent in this world, isn't it?
Right. But I think it also goes to say is that the women that I've talked to, they straight up said, you know, as much as they love the person, they just couldn't get themselves to throw throw out 15 years of behavior that they had adopted. For some people, I guess it just doesn't come as naturally as you would think. But, you know, who knows? Like, you know, these are the experiences of some of the girls I've spoken to, but I'm curious, you having been married twice, like, what's your experience like? What's your outlook?
Yeah, I mean, it was uncomfortable. It was, you know, I think that that's normal. I think that that happens with everyone, doesn't it? It's like you're self-conscious, it's a completely new experience. It's something you've never been through. It's something, you know, I've heard for a lot of women, it's really, really painful. For me personally, my first time, I can't say that it was necessarily painful, but definitely uncomfortable from like an emotional perspective, but also like a physical perspective. You know, you have no fucking idea what you're doing. And like, I don't know, it's so uncomfortable. And I just feel like that's really normal. But I wasn't asked, it wasn't something that I was like asked about, now that I think about it. Like, it was never brought up, like, are you comfortable? Like, are we moving at a speed that you're okay with? That wasn't something that was brought up at all. And actually, now that I think about it, I feel like I wish I would have wanted that. You know what I mean? Like, right. I would have wanted right, some definitely. Respect in that regard. But
I feel like just asking that is like, there's compassion in that.
Yeah, actually, you know, I completely agree with you. I had been asked like after the fact, then it was like, are you okay? And it's like, well, you know, not really, but it doesn't fucking matter anymore, you know? Like, yeah, I agree with you. I think that it would have been better if it had been asked like during or before or whatever. But like, most of the stories that I've heard in regards to like the first time always seems to be pretty similar, because it's like I said, it's an experience that it's like you don't even really know what to expect. Right? You don't know what you're doing. This other person, you know, may or may not know what they're doing depending on their situation. You know, it can be painful. It can be emotionally overwhelming, as a matter of fact, as well. Like, I know, you know, women who, because the feelings and the emotions are so overwhelming, like they'll cry or whatever, you know. So it's like, I mean, I don't know. First times, like, don't expect it to be like amazing. Because it's usually not. I don't think it's comfortable for anyone. I mean, for a female. For men, I don't know. I mean, it's probably great for them. But for the women, I think it's, I think it's normal for the first time to be like uncomfortable and like not so amazing.
But, you know, I feel like in terms of just men in general, there is a general overall, just a general failure to understand why a woman feels the way she does, why it makes her uncomfortable, why it can be a painful experience, whether it's emotionally or physically. Because the way I view it, your whole life, you're put on this pedestal just by virtue of being a woman. Take out the Muslim aspect of it, right? Mm-hmm. And you're hyper scrutinized in two ways. The measure of society is somehow dictated by how naked a woman is or how covered she is. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what it's come down to. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be like that. It's unfair. Mm-hmm. But that's how some people measure the morality of any given society. Mm-hmm. People overseas look at the West and see, oh, this is just a godless society because women are just naked at the beach. And then from here, we judge Muslim countries. Oh, they have no rights because they're all covered. Like, no one understands each other.
Right.
But the baseline, the premise of them assessing the morality of any given society is somehow based on women. Uh-huh. The way a woman is dressed, uh-huh. which I find very interesting. That puts pressure on every single woman, no matter what spectrum she's on, whether the type of woman who likes to show a lot of skin or someone who likes to cover up, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Because that expectation is put on you. Mm-hmm. Where dudes, there is no expectation. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to live in a society where me not wearing too much clothes or wearing as much as I want does not bat an eye. It's just neutral. Like, a neutral response is what I would like. Women aren't afforded that. It's either one or the other. When I see women like having the load of that expectation constantly on them, and let's say you're a Muslim woman and you've adopted your practice to cover, if you tell me that I have to throw all these, you know, practices out the window and completely expose myself to someone, like, completely, it's just, that's nerve-wracking. And I feel like a lot of women go through that.
Yeah.
I was actually watching this YouTube couple. They're actually my favorite YouTube couple, Jasmine Faris and Dawood. They're a Lebanese couple. Mm-hmm. And they actually posted a video about this, which I was surprised because I haven't seen, you know, Muslim YouTube couples do that.
Okay.
And they were talking about when they got married and they were talking about subject of sex and marriage in general.
Uh-huh.
They were very, you know, mature about it and very forthright. The guy was like, yeah, I mean, her comfort mattered to me the most and we had discussed it prior to marriage.
Right.
The girl was like, yeah, I wasn't comfortable. And she was like, it was a gradual progression.
Right.
It wasn't like you did everything that he wanted you to do the first night.
Right, right. Like she said, it is a gradual progression because you have to realize that, you know, it's almost like you have to learn this person's body, if that makes any sense. Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not just necessarily talking about like pleasing them perspective. It's also just the way that they'll hold you or stuff like that. It's almost like you have to find that form where you guys fit comfortably. And then later you find like positions that are like comfortable or whatever that you guys end up both liking. But specifically from the woman's perspective, it's like the first time, maybe even the first 10 times are going to be a little uncomfortable, especially if this is something that you hadn't previously been married, you hadn't previously been sexually active, and it's your first experience in that realm, can be very, very uncomfortable, and it takes time.
Right. I think the thing that bothers me the most is because in Muslim societies, because sex is such a taboo subject, I feel like what's actually happening is that men talk about it amongst themselves,
yeah,
and women talk about it amongst themselves. And that's the part that should not be happening.
Right.
Because what do men know about women? You don't know like what this is like for a woman. It could be traumatic. It could be a very daunting experience. It's them talking amongst themselves about their own selfish experiences.
Yeah, but come on, you have to be fair. I mean, if a guy was to bring up that kind of a conversation with a female, like depending on how he brought it up, like he could easily offend her or she could be weirded out by it. I mean, you talk about this like it's such an easy thing for guys to do, just walk up to women and be like, even if they're friends, like, hey, like, what's this like? You know, it must be an uncomfortable thing to bring up.
No. Of course, like you do it in a facilitated setting. I agree with you. But you would do it in a mature facilitated setting. You wouldn't just do it like in your typical locker room talk the way men do. And maybe some women do.
Right.
I mean, the conversations that I've had were for the most part mature. They never had like a locker room vibe to them. But I know that's not the case with men.
Guys do that because they want to be cool. Like that's the reality.
Pretty much. For women, it's like sexual health discussions and you know, but for men, I'm very sure that's majority of time not the case.
Yeah.
There has to be a way to bridge that gap where you provide men that opportunity of understanding women more.
Honestly, you want to know what my opinion is? The best way to do this is for parents to get involved.
Really?
Like, not super young, but normal, like when an individual becomes a teenager, when they're going through puberty or when they're about to go through puberty, for the parents to have those conversations. And especially, as you said, in Islamic society, it's so taboo. So taboo. Ask any Muslim friend that you have if their parents talk to them about sex, and you, like 99% of them will say, absolutely not. Like, we didn't talk about it. We didn't discuss it. I didn't learn anything from my parents, which I completely disagree with. As a parent, it's like, it's your responsibility. You're in charge of teaching this person everything. And why is sex any different?
Right. That's a really good point. My culture, I'm Pakistani. I grew up with the notion where they just tell you that there's no intimacy. They see it kind of like a transaction just to get
kids,
it done.
Just to have the babies.
Yeah. Just to have babies. Like that's like the underlying sentiment.
If men were taught by their fathers or even by their mothers, right? I think that both should be involved. Mm-hmm. If a man is taught at a young age, like I said, he's about to hit puberty or he's, you know, just hitting puberty, you know, when they become sexually interested, when you have that conversation with them about how they need to be respecting women from a sexual standpoint, having those conversations, I think, are really impactful in a child's mind. It's like, think about it. You're a guy and you're being told by your mother and your father, listen, these are things that you can do when you get married, inshallah. And when you do get married, it's going to be a nice, pleasant experience, but you also need to respect her feelings. You know, it's like if that is being implanted into your head at a young age, then when it actually happens, like, you're going to be a lot more compassionate and sympathetic and empathetic and whatever, and you're going to care about her feelings, and it's going to be more about her than it is going to be about you. Because honestly, I believe on the first night it should definitely be more about the girl, because for the girl, we talked about earlier, it can be painful, not just physically but emotionally. And I feel like guys don't have that physical or emotional pain. For them, it's just like a desire they've been craving for a while, so it's almost like
an
outlet, maybe, like a like a release or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
It's that social pressure that I talked about, where women carry the burden of society's, you know, the moral metric. So it's just like, if I've been carrying this burden all my life, that I'm somehow the metric of how moral the society is that I'm part of, and then all of a sudden you just tell me, throw all your measurements out the window. Mm-hmm. Like, that's gonna be problematic. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's gonna be difficult, you know, mentally.
It's gonna be difficult, and that burden is not placed on it. And I'm not talking about just Islamic societies. I'm talking about across the board.
Even in the West, girls are pressured into having sex, because even if they're not comfortable with it, I don't feel like it's the same for guys the way it is for girls. I mean, maybe they are too. I wouldn't know, because I'm not a guy. I never went through that. But from the stories that I've heard...
Really? I didn't know.
But from the stories that I've heard of friends, you know, that were female in comparison to friends that were male, the story is so different. Maybe they talk this way because they want to, like, come across as looking like they're cool or whatever, but the male's version of the story for, like, their first time or whatever is always, oh yeah, like, I was so excited, it was so great, this, that. And then for the girl, it's always like, well, I didn't really want to do it. You know what I mean? Like... And I'm talking about within marriage and outside of marriage as well. Like, you know, because obviously in the West, there are plenty of people who engage in sexual experiences outside of marriage.
I read this statistic. It was a large statistic. 1/3 of all Muslims are not virgin outside of marriage. I mean.
It's because of peer pressure. I tell you, the high school that I went to, it was like, and I'm sure everybody's high school was like this. If you weren't engaging in sexual activity, you were like not cool. You know, people would like make fun of you, you know, like you had to be doing it to like be one of the cool kids. I would assume in most Western societies it's the same, like in Europe and the UK and Australia. I would assume it's the same. I think that when you're talking about like Middle Eastern countries, it's very different. But specifically in the States, mm-hmm. It was, the peer pressure was like rampant. Like, it was just crazy. And it's really unfortunate, because a lot of girls end up giving their virginity to somebody who they're never going to be seeing again after high school, or, you know, they end up giving their virginity away even though they don't want to. They're pressured into it even though they never wanted it.
Right. Well, you know, one of the pros about being Muslim is that we don't have that kind of pressure placed on us, but it's kind of pressure in the opposite direction, right? It's weird, because it's like the metric of morality is still placed on our shoulders, but both by completely different opposite metrics, based on if you're living in the West or in the East. You know, in the West is what you talked about, and then, you know, in the East it's just the opposite.
Like, you don't talk about it.
So there's no winning either way.
Yeah, you're right. That's funny. I didn't even think about that. You're completely right. It's two completely different spectrums.
You're seen as like a provocative, promiscuous person here in the West. Countries in the East are going to look at you and be like, wow, like, your women are so out there. Like, they're just so easy. No morals. They're godless. All of these things. And then, you know, get Muslim societies from this vantage point here in the US, and we're just like, wow, you oppress your women. Like, they're not allowed to wear what they want. I don't think we're the problem. You're the problem. It's kind of like two opposite notions clashing. And for some reason, it's middle. Women are in the middle of it. So it's just like, why? Put the metric on men. Like, why can't we blame men for something?
Because we live in a male-dominated society, which is why we created this podcast. But I said, I think the most important thing is the parents' involvement in the conversations that they're having. But like you talked about, you said, okay, certain societies, the point of sex is simply just to have babies. I've heard this before as well. It should be enjoyable for the man, but whether the woman enjoys it or not is like irrelevant, which is something that I 100% disagree with. And I think that every man in the world should also disagree with that, because at the end of the day, if the woman is enjoying herself, then she's going to be more sexually active with her husband. You know what I'm saying? Like, if every time they have sex, it's uncomfortable for her and she's not enjoying it, then she's going to be very put off anytime he wants to be intimate with her. It's going to be like a burden for her, like, if she's not pleased in that way. But if he goes out of his way to make sure that she's like, it's not just his sexual desires that are being fulfilled, it's also hers, like, she's also enjoying it to the same extent as him or even more, she's going to be able to please him in the sexual ways that he wants. And I think that that's also a taboo thing, especially in the Middle East. They view sex as being like something that is for the man, where that's not true.
Right. And if it's for the woman, then the woman is somehow shameless.
Yeah, you're completely right. I completely agree with you.
Well, you know, I would argue that that notion exists in the West as well.
You think so?
Yeah, I do think so. Remember in the last podcast episode, I talked about everyone should be a feminist. We'll have like this averse reaction to that term, being a feminist. Just Google the Merriam-Webster definition. And if you agree with that definition of feminism, then you're a feminist. Men and women are equal in their humanity, their worth in society, and, you know, the opportunities that should be afforded. Right. Simple definition, right?
Right.
I don't imagine people objecting to that. But I think where the debate ends up coming is the layers that are added on top of the word feminism. You know, there are several layers you can load on top of the term feminism, that being, you know, sex positive feminism and sex negative feminism.
Right.
You know, the sex positive feminists, they have this notion, again, placing the burden on women, like feminists are doing this. Me, I don't have a particular opinion one way or the other, because I'm like, we don't do this to men. It's just the sex positive feminists are basically like, no, women can be naked all they want because that's actually liberating. That's not objectifying women.
Uh-huh.
We're not making them into sex objects. It's liberating women because women can wear whatever they want.
Right.
And that's the point of that.
Right.
And then the sex negative feminisms are saying, no, you shouldn't do that, because when you wear, you know, lingerie out in public and you're wearing all these provocative clothing and, you know, bikinis, what have you, you're putting yourself up to be objectified. So you have both ends of the spectrum in that ideology. But the reason I bring that up is because there is that notion that kind of still exists, where women, among sex negative feminists, if a woman is sexual in any way, even there is a movement here in the US where they believe that she's shameless, she's godless.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like men in general, doesn't matter if you live in the West, it doesn't matter North, South, East, West, it does not matter. Men, when they're dating, they want the promiscuous girl.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as they get married, they want the girl next door.
Yes, they are the humble like nun. Yeah. Yes, no, you are 100%. And I've heard this come out of men's, like, so many men have told me this, because, you know, let's just be real, Muslim men or non-Muslim men, a lot of men are very, yeah, they've slept around before marriage, even right. though the
but they want a clean slate. You know, they want the girl next door type of girl when they get married. They want that type of girl who's going to feel uncomfortable when she has to engage in intimacy because, you know, she's so clean and stuff.
She's never done it
before.
She's
never, yeah, that's what they want.
That is so messed up. For a man to be going out and making his mistakes, because we've talked about this before as well on other episodes, like, we're meant to sin. Now, the level of sin that you do is, I'm not saying, oh, everyone should be, you know, making these huge sins. That's not what I'm saying. But we're all human and we're all going to make mistakes. And Allah says mm-hmm. that if our creation was perfect, then he would destroy us all and he would create a new set of people that would sin, right? Because that's what he wants. He wants us to sin and he wants us to ask for forgiveness and come back to him over right, and over right. and over again, right? That's the point. For a man to be making these sins, and parents, they praise it. If their boy is doing these things, they're just like, oh, he's a boy. Oh, no big deal. He's just a boy. And so for a guy to be making these kinds of mistakes, it's supposed to be okay. But then when a girl makes the same mistakes, it's like she's like a whore and she's viewed upon very differently, not just from mm-hmm. society, but from her own parents as well. Like, oh, how could you have possibly done this? Well, older brother did it too. Oh, well, he's a boy. It doesn't make any sense. Like you said, it's like women are put on this pedestal where the expectations for how they should be living their life and what they should be doing is just, it's so unrealistic. Nobody's perfect. The only thing that's perfect is Allah himself. And so we are, you know, expected to make mistakes and to repent for it. But then how come it is that when a woman makes a mistake and she repents, then she's never forgiven? Oh, there's no way that Allah has forgiven you. I've heard this said to my face. Like, how, you'll never be forgiven for that. Oh, really? Who are you? Like, I didn't know that you were the Almighty Allah. Like, you know, how can that even come out of your mouth? From a man. Like, you know, you'll never be forgiven for this. But you've done the exact same thing. So how come you're forgiven, but I'm not forgiven? Like, what's the difference between us?
You know, I knew a girl who she had sex outside of marriage. She wasn't married. She was a Muslim. She repented. It mm-hmm. really affected her to the point where she didn't want to live anymore. It's one thing if you know someone who doing this stuff, like someone related to you, and you're like super concerned mm-hmm. that they could be harming themselves. You don't out that person. You just tell maybe their parents, I guess. But she had been mm-hmm. outed by her friends to mm-hmm. everyone. Like, that's just not something you do. What ended up happening is that she felt so guilty that she went to the mosque and she was repenting and she was crying relentlessly. A woman approaches her and she's like, what's wrong? Is everything okay? She's just like, you know, I've just done something that I feel like is not forgivable and all this stuff. And the woman was really understanding. She was like, you know, Allah always forgives. If you mm-hmm. repent, Allah always forgives. But she had mm-hmm. no idea what it was. Mm-hmm. Until, you know, the girl grew a little bit comfortable with her and she told her, okay, this is what I've done. And she was like, I can't live with myself. I don't want to live anymore. And she's having these suicidal thoughts in the masjid. And the woman next door all of a sudden goes quiet. She asked her, am I going to go to hell? And she said, you might. That was her response. Like, I think you might.
Like, that's pretty... I'm disappointed with that woman's reaction.
So it's just like,
it's like,
you know...
Allah says that if you had a mountain of sins, even if it was, you know, bigger than the biggest mountain of sins, and you asked for forgiveness from your hearts, then I would forgive you, period. So it's like, there shouldn't be any question ever about Allah's ability to forgive. You know, they say the way that your mother loves you, Allah loves us 7 times more than that. Being a mother myself, it's like, I know how much I love my child. I know that I would do anything for him. I would swim across an ocean for him, you know? And so it's like, to think that Allah loves us 7 times more than that is something that we cannot possibly fathom, because it's a level of love that we will never be able to understand.
Right. There was no consoling words to say, no, your life is still worth living. You know, you have value.
To say that Allah loves us that much and he can't forgive us, that's insane. You know, they say that everything is forgivable except if you don't believe in one God. But that's only if you die in that state. Because some people believe, oh, if you don't believe in one God, but you repent and then you do believe in one God, you're still not forgiven, because that's something Allah will never mm-hmm. forgive. But that's a lie, because even in the time of the prophets, there were magicians and the pagans, they changed to Islam and some of them became really great Muslims and they were forgiven. So to say that anyone is not forgiven, that's a lie. The only thing that we know for a fact is that if mm-hmm. you believe in something other than Allah and you die in that state, then that is something that is something that Allah won't forgive. That, and we know that because it's talked about in the Quran, you know? But other than that, everything else, I mean, there's a story of like prostitutes who were forgiven because they showed compassion towards animals. So if a prostitute who sleeps around with multiple men for money, mm-hmm. she gives her body away for money, can be forgiven because the level of compassion that she showed to animals, then how is it that somebody who was young, probably peer pressured into sleeping with somebody, not going to be forgiven when they've genuinely repented? It doesn't make any sense.
I mean, I think going back to that woman, like, there was no compassion in that conversation when she found out. But kind of like shifting the conversation a little bit, there's also a very unforgiving attitude towards a woman if she is married and she knows what she wants. You having been married, have you ever had experiences similar to that?
Yes. Yes, I have. If so, for my second marriage, obviously at that point I was older and I had, you know, I had my previous experience and all of this stuff. So yeah, I mean, I knew what I wanted in terms of, you know, it's like I had been through that like innocent figuring it out phase with the first husband, right? So then by the time the second husband came around, it was like, I knew what I wanted in the bedroom, I guess, to say the least. But he, I don't know if this was a cultural thing. I don't know if this was a man thing. I don't know what it was. But he, especially in the beginning, I don't know what he was expecting. I mean, he knew that I was married because I have a child. But maybe he was expecting me to be like that timid, like whatever in the bedroom, which I wasn't. And he came across as like kind of shocked about it. I don't know, which was like very strange for me. Like, he made me feel like, well, why are you so confident in the bedroom or something? I don't know, man. It was weird. It was just weird. It was like, why doesn't any of this matter? You married a woman with a child. Like, why is that even a conversation that's coming up? Like, why are you asking me these things, you know?
Yeah. So there's like no winning either way. If you're timid in the beginning, there's no winning. And then if you're like, if you had some experience,
confident and you know what you want, there's no winning either. You're still judged as like godless. Like, well, what have you done? You know, it's like, I have a child, dude. Like, figure it out. If you couldn't put 1 + 1 together, like, if me telling you that I've been previously with someone because therefore I have a child and you couldn't figure that out on your own, then I don't know what to tell you.
Wait, why aren't you timid? You should ask him, why aren't you timid?
No, that was the thing too, is that he had lied to me about like previous relationships he had been in, and then I found out the truth later, which was really annoying for me, because it's like, well, for me, it kind of was a problem that I had been previously married. But for you, you had girlfriends before, and that's not supposed to be a problem. I mean,
it's the girl next door narrative. Yeah,
it's like they expect, and I've heard this directly come out of multiple men's mouths. You know, me dating these girls, it's like, oh, I'm just dating them, like I don't plan on marrying them, like they're not marriage material. Well, that's very strange, because now you're just taking advantage of a woman. Maybe she lost her virginity to you thinking that you were planning on marrying her, and you probably enjoyed it. You probably enjoyed the fact that you took this girl's virginity. You probably felt like you were 100 right. feet high, and you probably loved it. But in the back of your head, you're like, no, the fact that she slept with me means that I won't marry her because she's too easy. She's not marriage material. So it's like you've basically just, for lack of a better word, it's like you've spoiled this woman, right, and her innocence and her virginity or whatever, and now you're not even planning on settling down with her. You're going to find some other virgin to be your wife. Like, it's fucked up. If that doesn't describe something being super fucked up, I don't know what does.
That's interesting. So there's this book that kind of cross applies to everything you just said. It's called Wholehearted, A Collection of Poetry and Prose by Sara Bawani. She wrote this poem. It's called An Ode to the Muslim Fuckboy, and I love it. It starts off as, you, fresh cut and carefully trimmed beard, with your 31 hashtags while on your fourth beer. You spend your Saturday afternoons in the back of a hookah lounge, and your Friday nights in the corner of the loudest club you found. You, pornography-loving, feminist-hating, claim to be the nice but misunderstood one, who will come along and save her from all the other boys before her who are just like you. Ask Fatima for a picture without her hijab while commenting under Mariam's photos for her lack of hijab. I can sniff out men like you from miles away. Your cheap cologne isn't enough to suffocate anyone who has heard you lecture women about how they shouldn't be wearing perfume, and you reek of double standards. And I'm tired of watching your mother break her back to save the reputation of your sorry ass, while the very women you destroy are considered outcasts who fall into the trap and promises of forever because they believe that maybe this time a man could actually be telling the truth. To your mothers, I'd like to say, one, if our tradition has taught us that men are supposed to, quote, take care, unquote, of women, why have you taught them to do everything except that? Two, if our prophet couldn't defend his wife Aisha when she was accused of adultery without knowing the truth, what makes you think you have the right to defend your son's outrageous behavior? Three, if you're going to teach your daughters that the honor of the family falls on their shoulders, then at the very least, teach them not to marry sons like yours. And to them, I'd like to say, even if you keep your internet history clean for more than just a few hours, you still don't have the authority to lecture me about the purity of my heart. Got the nicest watch on your wrist, but you've been caught red-handed with those signature catchphrases that escape your lips so candidly. Inshallahs and mashallahs scattered through every other sentence. Your religious persona may be believable, but the good stuff's in your DMs. This poem is not an apology. I am not sorry for your discomfort. I see you squirming in your chair and the phrase, quote, not all men, unquote, on your lips. And I am the furthest thing from interested. This is a eulogy to your facade of masculinity, because I just burned your ego to the ground. You better take off that plastic crown, because when my sisters still receive unsolicited pictures from men they will be standing behind for Isha in just a few hours, I assume exposure just isn't a problem for you. And full disclosure, you bet every disgusting message you have ever sent that you are just exhibit number one. We have built a museum of your secrets, and your reputation is about to be undone. What do you think?
That was amazing. Yeah. Like, that's so good. Like, I love it. I absolutely love it. Shout out to the author.
Again, you can buy her book on Amazon. It's called Wholehearted, A Collection of Poetry and Prose by Sara Bawani. And the poem is called An Ode to the Muslim Fuckboy. You'll find it on page 66.
That is amazing. Sara, you are inspirational. That was really good. Like, I feel like that literally just sums up our entire... You should have read that in the beginning. We don't even need this episode. You should have just read that and that was it, you know?
I should have just put that.
That's funny.
But yeah, it's a great poem.
I feel like that really summarizes everything. And she highlighted as well that concept of like the mother's involvement, which is what I talked about as well. It's like the parents' involvement, I think, is so important. And if the parents are constantly backing him, like, oh, it's okay because he's just a boy. Oh, don't worry about your brother. He's just a boy. Oh, don't think about what he's doing. He's just a boy. Or what my ex-husband's parents thought their concept was, like, oh, you know, he is this way, but, you know, his wife will change him. It's like the fact that you are encouraging this behavior on your child makes you just as guilty as them.
Right, because the dismissive attitude, like being a bystander, is kind of it's enabling them.
And you're hurting women. Whether you're a mother or a father, you are contributing to the, you know, society where women are being taken advantage of. You're contributing to this sexist society.
I mean, what can you do?
Nothing can change now, but what could change is people recognizing this from here on out and then choosing to actively teach their children at a young age how to respect women. That's the solution. The generation that we are, you know, if you're between your 20s and your 30s or older, right? It's like, okay, you're not going to change. The only thing that will change you is if Allah changes you or if you decide to change yourself or some sort of experience that you've been through. There isn't a person that's going to come into your life and tell you, okay, this isn't good. You need to change it. And for you to just be like, yeah, I agree with you. Like, that's not how life works. But what you have the power to change is your children. You have the power to influence how you raise your children and how they see the world. And if your boys are going to respect the women in their lives, and if the women in their lives are going to understand their worth, because that's really what it boils down to. You know, girls that have been raised with confidence by their parents constantly giving them confident affirmations of, you know, you are strong, you don't need to, you know, fall prey to, you know, peer pressure and this and that. Those are the girls that when they're in the situation alone with a boy and they're in high school and this boy is trying to pressure them, they have the confidence to say, you know what, I'm not interested. So it's not just about raising your sons, it's also about raising your daughters, right?
Right. So let me ask you this question, because how young are we talking of programming boys to, I hate the word programming, maybe the word I should say is prevent programming of boys thinking this way about women?
Honestly, I think that it could happen immediately. I'll just give you an example in my household. Like, at a very young age, there would be circumstances where, like, I wanted a toy and my brother wanted a toy, but I wasn't given that toy because I was a girl and he was given the toy because he was a boy. You know, so it's like, it's small, very small, or even like a pack of gum or something. Very, very small, where the boy is basically given privileges over the girl. Right. That is already programming the boy to think that he is above the girl. It's small things like that that then create this domino effect or this snowball effect where, right now it's just a little pack of gum that you gave your four-year-old, right, over his sister or whatever, and you don't make him share. It's not a big deal because he's a boy. But then when he gets a little bit older, then it's okay, well, he's allowed to go out and the girl isn't allowed to go out. And you may have your different reasons for why you would want a girl not to be going out or whatever from, you know, from an Islamic perspective. But again, that's going to be implanting things in the boy's head of, okay, I can do what I want. And that's not just limited to going out. If he's had these privileges his whole life, these small little privileges that as a parent, you don't think it's a big deal, but you're programming this child to think, okay, I'm a boy, I can do what I want, and women can't do what they want. You're automatically programming this thought process in them that is like, okay, I'm better than her, I'm above her, in society I'm above her, I'm allowed to do what I want. When I'm with a woman, I am in charge, I am in control of her, she is my property. So I think it's something that should already start at a very young age, where everything is equal. Again, going into their puberty years, their conversations that you need to sit. You shouldn't be having your teenage son and your teenage girl in on the same conversation, because they should be completely different conversations. I think that should be something that's definitely implemented. If you're not going to be allowing your teenage daughter to be going out, let's say she wants to go to the movies or she wants to go, I don't know where, and you're like, no, I don't want you to go out because you're a girl. If that's your thought process, then you need to also be implementing that towards your son as well. No, he shouldn't be, and it shouldn't be because you're a girl or because you're a boy. It should simply be because you are Muslim children. I don't want you making the wrong decisions. I am protecting you, and that's the reason. It's not about you're a boy, you're a girl. No, I'm protecting you from the messed up society that you're surrounded by, and I don't want either of you making poor choices, so both of you will stay home.
It's a good point. So you have a son.
Alhamdulillah.
What
mashallah.
Mashallah. You know, and you mentioned the snowball effect. It's the small things, because, you know, when a snowball starts, let's say it's just you made a snowball and you're on top of a mountain and you're going to throw it down the mountain. You know, the snowball starts off very small. Mm-hmm. And then as it rolls down the mountain, it's accumulating more snow with it. So by the time it's at the foothill, it's this giant chunk right. of snow.
Dinosaur snowball. Yeah.
So when you mentioned that and you're talking about starting from childhood, it's these micro behaviors of making sure that both children get the toy, or making sure that both children yeah. wash the dishes, and both the boy and the girl, they're both helping with yeah. cooking and all of these things.
Right.
How have you personally implemented that with your
yeah,
own
family? I mean,
not that he has a sister to compare it to, but what things would he be doing that are typically placed on little girls?
Everything that I do, I have him do it with me. If I'm cleaning, I have certain things that I assign to myself. I have certain things that I assign to him. If I'm cooking, you know, I have certain things that obviously I assign to myself, like cooking the things that are important, like the meat, you know, whereas, and he's doing like the vegetables. And it's not just about boy and girl things. These are skills that are going to help your son in the future, right? You want your boy to go off to college, correct? Okay, well, when he's in college, is there going to be a girl around to cook for him? No. Who's cooking for him? You're not going to be around. You're not going to fly to his university across the world, or even drive 2 hours to his dorm to make his biryani. Like, it's not going to happen, you know? These are skills that you're giving your child, that sexism kind of ideology of like, oh, the women are supposed to be in the kitchen and the men are supposed to be doing like the, I don't know,
yard work.
Hard work. Yeah, exactly. It's not something that applies to our society anymore. Because, I mean, if you're talking about back in the day, it was a different society. Women weren't a part of the workforce. They were at home with the children because that's how society was. Okay, fine. Fair enough. I agree with you. But nowadays things are, I mean, education wasn't something that was like prevalent or even existing at the time. It's like the world is not the same anymore. It's like even just the simple idea of your son going off to college, he should be able to cook for himself. You want him spending money every single day to get McDonald's or something? Like, it doesn't make sense. It's not feasible. It's not realistic.
It's not feasible. Yeah. You know, that's interesting because the world is turned into a double income household anyways. Right. The economic state, at least here in the US, but I imagine abroad as well, is such that you cannot have an efficient household without two streams of income.
Right.
And so women are having to work. And right. now there are more women in the workforce than men are in the workforce.
Right.
The stats are pretty staggering. So it's like this attitude of women being, you know, sex is just for the men. They're in the kitchen for the men. They're cooking for the men. They're doing all these things for the men. It has to go out the window because it seems like we're kind of taking the reins on being breadwinners as well.
And that's such an unrealistic standard placed onto a woman. I saw this video. This girl, she comes home from work. She, you know, the place is a mess. So she puts, you know, she's cleaning up after the kids. She's doing the laundry. She starts the cooking. Still after her long day of work. You know, she's doing all of these things. And then like the husband is like sitting on the couch and just kind of watching her. And then the feeling that you get when you're watching this is like, oh, what a lazy ass. Like, he should help her. Mm-hmm. And then he's just kind of like watching her, whatever. And then at the end of it, like, he gets up and he like takes the vacuum from her to like help her. And it's like that concept of like, well, why is it that a woman has worked all day long and then she comes home and she's still responsible of taking care of the children. She's still responsible of, you know, cleaning the house and doing this and doing that. It makes no sense. First of all, if you want to talk about kids, men out there, you participated in 50% of creating that child. So why is it that the full sole responsibility of taking care of them is on the right. mother and not on you? Like, none of it makes any sense. If she's working a full-time job and coming home and still cleaning and stuff, I don't give a shit if you're working a full-time job, you should be assisting her, because it's not fair for a woman to be like overwhelmed and overworked to that extent. Times have changed, and the hard work also consists of making sure that the house is in order after work. Then you need to participate in that. And men are so quick to use Islam how they want to use it, to pick and choose which parts of Islam they want to follow and stuff. But when it comes to utilizing it into our society of today, like, they refuse.
No, for sure. Right. Both people in the household, both husband and wife, are working. Those are two streams of income. That is a 50-50 effort in wealth creation of that household. Then there should be a 50-50 effort in household maintenance. But it's not like that. It's like it's 50-50 in terms of wealth creation in the household, in terms of the effort. But then additionally, the woman has housework as well. But I want to bring some staggering data just in terms of like women engaging the workforce, at least here in the United States. So according to the Association of American Medical Colleges, as of 2019, there are now more women in medical school than men. And according to the U.S. Department of Education, women outpaced men in earning bachelor's degrees by 1982.
That was a long time ago.
A long time ago. They earned more master's degrees than men by 1987. And by 2006, they took up majority of the doctoral degrees conferred in the United States. So like we're actually beating them on every frontier. So it's like as soon as we got rights to do all these things, they were running, but we were dashing to catch up. And now we kind of reached that inflection point where we've surpassed them. And yet, you know, this expectation is still put on us where the morality of a society is still on the woman. Now that you're breadwinners as well, but, you know, we're still not going to give you credit for that. Somehow narrative of men being the breadwinners still persists. No matter what you do, it always just feels like it's for the man. I mean, there are days where I feel like that, where in terms of my job, if people don't know, I work in the healthcare industry, but I'm not a frontline healthcare professional. Mm-hmm. I work in an office setting. But, you know, I engage with a lot of doctors. And one thing I've noticed is the women doctors, people are calling them by their first name, like my colleagues. Right. But the male doctors, they're called like Dr. Williams or Dr. Johnson or Dr. Reeves. But the women doctors that I work with, I pay them the respect that they earned these degrees. So I'm going to call them Dr. Lunde, Dr. Sitapati. But the point is, you see this across the board. So it's just like you can please men, whether it's in the bedroom, you can please them in terms of household maintenance. You can please them in terms of wealth creation within the household. You can please everybody, your work colleagues at work, but you won't get credit for it. Isn't that weird?
Yeah, I mean, but to be honest with you, it's not really surprising. It's unfortunate, but not surprising with the world that we live in today.
Basically, the last point is, I think you make a great point where if you're raising a son, you have to take these active steps, whether it's in the smallest things, to prevent the snowball effect of them gaining this sense of entitlement over women by the time that they're older. Referring to a previous podcast we had, having discussions with a boy that this world is a slightly bit more unfair for their sister.
Yeah, and I think that parents automatically expect the brothers to protect, quote unquote, protect their sister in society or in the world or in high school or whatever. But does he really know what he's protecting her from? Like, have you even had those conversations, or are you just assuming that he knows? Because a lot of the times as parents, we assume that our children understand things that we've never talked to them about, and they have no way of understanding unless we do talk to them about it. And it's like, what do you prefer? Do you prefer yourself teaching your child this, or society teaching your child this? Because I'll tell you right now that if you're relying on society to teach your kids these things, it's not going to turn out the way that you want them to understand it.
Right.
They're going to see it in a very skewed way, and in a way that is probably un-Islamic and probably morally incorrect from the things that you believe. Even though these are conversations a lot of people don't want to have. I mean, I'm going to be real with you. It's like, I'm not looking forward to the day when I'll have that conversation about sex with my son. It's not something I'm like, oh my God, I can't wait. Of course, I don't want to have that conversation because it's uncomfortable, not just for him. It's extremely uncomfortable for me, but it's something that I know I have to do. And it's something that every parent should have to do because, like I said, what do you prefer? Do you prefer you teaching your child this stuff and giving them, you know, respect and helping them to understand it from an Islamic perspective? Or do you want society teaching them? And believe me, society and their friends and their teachers, the school, whatever, they're going to be teaching them that, especially in the West, hey, sex is normal, man. Do what you want to do. So that taboo of not talking about it is not the solution. Parents need to now own up and be like, okay, society has ruled for too long. I'm taking back control over what my child knows and how they know it. And I'm going to be responsible for that. So, I mean, just going back onto the, you know, the whole sex thing, it's like, I think it's important for, I mean, we've focused a lot on like the younger years, but it's like, okay, now let's just refocus for a second. You're talking about a man who's in his, you know, mid 20s or 30s or whatever. He's just recently getting married. My message to the men would be, have some respect towards your future wife or your wife. Have some respect and understanding that sex for us is not comfortable. The first time is not comfortable. I mean, later on, yes, this is a different story, but definitely the first time is not comfortable. And typically the first few times aren't comfortable, not just physically, but also emotionally. It can be very overwhelming. And these are things that we ourselves don't understand. Like if you see a chick or your wife or whatever crying after you've had intimate relations with her, more than likely she has no idea why she's crying. So don't think like, oh my God, something's wrong. It's like, it's this, I mean, our hormones can be a little overwhelming sometimes. And there are situations in our life and times of the month or whatever, where we can be overwhelmed by our emotions and we don't even understand them ourselves. So, you know, you have to be compassionate towards that. And then my message to women would be, don't be afraid to have that conversation. If you're just getting married, you're a little nervous to be having sex for the first time and you're a little uncomfortable or whatever, you know, you're worried about how that first night's gonna go, have a conversation with him. Don't be afraid to have a conversation with him. Even if you've been married to this guy for like 10 years and when you have sex with him, it's like painful or something, don't hide that stuff in. Have a conversation with him so that he can understand. Because, you know, a lot of the times miscommunication takes place. For example, I've met women who they think that they're like, what is it? Asexual? Like they're not attracted to anybody. They're not interested in sex. They just don't have any sexual desires. I don't know if they're not attracted to anyone. They just don't have any sexual desires. So for them, it's like sex is very uncomfortable. They don't initiate it, but they'll engage in it with their partner because obviously it's an Islamic right to a husband for his, you know, wife to give him intimacy. So they engage in it, but it's not something that they necessarily enjoy. And a lot of the times they don't even bother telling their partner this about them. So their partner, think about the kind of miscommunication that could take place. Maybe the guy is like, oh my God, she's not sexually attracted to me. That lack of communication could cause someone to cheat because they feel like they're not loved enough or whatever. Do you understand what I'm saying? So it's like, don't be afraid to have that conversation, even though you don't want to, even though it's difficult for you, even though it's uncomfortable for you. Step out of your bubble and have that conversation with this person and tell them how you're feeling. This person is your spouse and they love you and they've made that promise to Allah that they're going to be with you for this life. You shouldn't be afraid to talk to them about these things that you're feeling. And not only that, but you should be confident in knowing that they're going to be there for you regardless of what kind of conversations you're having with them, you know? And to be honest with you, if they make you feel that what you're saying to them is just not okay, then I mean, I think that that's a clear sign right there whether they're the right person for you or not.
Right. The way I view it is, one, there's never an excuse for cheating. Just because, you know, if a woman is going through it and she doesn't want to be intimate. But like, what's your take on, because this is a very easy excuse for men. And I've seen this scenario play out where the guy gives a woman a very hard time. He mistreats her, doesn't treat her well. But then, you know, all of a sudden he wants to get intimate with her. So he's really sweet. And she's just pissed. And she's like, no, I don't want to. Like, you've been belittling me.
Oh my God.
Yeah, right? I know, and then he invokes that one verse. Well, you know, according to the Quran, you must or
my
you will.
Favorite.
So. And then, you know, if they cheat, then they'll say, oh, well, you know, it's because of you.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man. But, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. Men who are like that are not worth your time. I went through this with my second ex-husband. He would yell at me. He would scream at me. He wouldn't make me feel good. I was not happy. He had a lot of anger and aggression. I've talked about this in the first episode that we did. And then at the end of it, like whenever he was done screaming for 8 hours, his mood would completely change. He would become super sweet and he'd try to have sex. And of course, you know, having been crying for the past 5 hours, I don't want you touching me. I don't want you anywhere near me. I don't want to be in the same room as you. Get the fuck away from me. But then of course he would like invoke that, you know, when the man calls his wife, she needs to come to, from an Islamic perspective, she needs to obey. And if she doesn't obey, then the angels curse her all night long. There are two sides to everything. Islam and Allah are the most just. So you're telling me that Islam is a just religion and there's no equality in this argument of you can treat me however you want to treat me and then I have to have sex with you? Like, it doesn't make any sense. But like I said, you know, men, they pick, it's not just men. Women do this too. It's like sometimes people are very quick to pick and choose the parts of the religion that they want to follow. And then there are big chunks of the religion that they don't want to follow. It just depends on the person. But that was something that I had to go through for 2 years. There was no changing him. There was no changing his mindset. He wasn't the right person for me. You know, if somebody is making you feel that way and it's something that's ongoing, going. They're not putting in any effort to change or care about your feelings or anything. Maybe you need to reassess if this is the right person for you. Mm-hmm. My personal opinion is that you don't need to be stuck with somebody who doesn't make you feel good.
It's interesting because when people invoke that one verse, they have a very siloed view of it. They like look at the verse alone. They don't look at anything else in conjunction with that verse, or they don't assess the whole point of a relationship on a holistic level. So what I mean by that is, suppose, you know, murder is a crime. If you read that provision by itself, on its own, just the one sentence, murdering is a crime. Well, what are you supposed to do if you murder somebody in self-defense?
Right.
Is that one provision by itself going to address your whole situation? That verse by itself is not a holistic of a situation. Like, you have to look at, you got to flip the page. You might find another provision that goes in conjunction with murder being a crime. Maybe like 20 pages over, it says protect yourself if you need to defend yourself. You know what I mean? You know, by the same token, that's how I view that verse. Like, that alone on its face.
No. But because there's that, the prophet said, the best of you are those that treat your women the best. And the last sermon that he gave, he talked about the women. You know, you need to protect the women. And it was something he repeated multiple times in his last sermon. It's a two-way thing. I will obey your sexual desires if you treat me appropriately. It's a two-way thing. If you're not treating me appropriately, then why am I forced to obey your sexual desires? It's a two-way thing. If you treat the woman the way that the prophet told you to treat your woman, then the woman's gonna treat you the way that Allah has ordered her to treat you. It's a two-way thing. If both people are doing what they need to do, there aren't gonna be any problems. But you have these people, and this is two ways. I'm not saying that it's only men. I know women that are difficult in their marriage, and it's the woman that's the problem. So I'm not saying that this is only a man thing.
What if on the flip side, the woman is the one asking that, you know, I want to be intimate, and the man is just like, no, that happens too, then what?
Well, I mean, I wasn't specifically talking about like sexual stuff. I was just talking about in general. Like, it could be the woman that has like the anger problems and blah, blah, blah. Right,
right, right. In general, so, yeah.
I mean, but my point is that regardless of who is causing the problem, it's like, if both people are doing what they need to be doing, then there's not going to be an issue. If one person or both people aren't doing what they need to be doing, and they're just picking and choosing which parts of the religion they want to use, then it's not going to work. I mean, or it will work and they'll just both be miserable. I mean, it's whatever lifestyle, whatever you want. If you want to have a happy marriage, then you're going to have to put in the effort to do what you need to do from an Islamic perspective.
Well, that is some solid advice. So I think we'll close it out from here. Next episode, we're going to have Carly Deardorff on our podcast. We're going to be discussing her perspective of someone who wasn't really introduced to a Muslim person until later in life. She grew up in a pretty much affluent society. She's going to be explaining to us of what world she was living in on the outside when Muslims were being vilified in the media, and her thoughts on Muslim women in general, if she was painted this picture, if women are oppressed, what she thought of the hijab, all of these things. It's always interesting to know what an outsider so far removed from our religion thought about us when the hate for us in the West was, you know, at an all-time high. So basically, you know, we'll be interviewing her to try to deprogram the Muslim woman narrative here in the United States and in the West in general of what the perception has been made out to be. Because, you know, our narrative was mostly perpetuated and propelled by white non-Muslim people, and kind of, you know, understanding for someone who knew nothing about our religion how that affected them. We'll see you guys next week. Hope everyone stays happy and healthy.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.